The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hello and welcome back to Simply Serie A. We are back from our Easter holidays. Buona Pasqua, is that how you say it? I hope I said it correctly anyway. Since we've been gone, a lot has happened. Juventus were crowned champions, their eighth Scudetto on the bounce. The Champions League race is at boiling point. Atalanta currently occupying fourth, and just 4 points separate them and Lazio, who are down in eighth. I'm going to start off by running through the week's results, but first, I want to welcome my panelists. Vittorio Campanile, welcome back.
Hello, everybody. How's everything?
How are you, sir? How was your Easter?
Not bad, thanks. Good. We enjoyed it.
Good. Glad to hear it. Tommy Milanese, welcome back. How are you, sir?
Good, man. How are you, man?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Can't complain. Can't complain. Right, let's run through the results from this weekend that's just gone. Atalanta 2, Udinese 0, Bologna 3, Empoli 1, Chievo 1, Parma 1, Fiorentina 0, Sassuolo 1, Frosinone 0, Napoli 2, Inter 1, Juventus 1, Roma 3, Cagliari 0, Sampdoria 1, Lazio 2, otherwise known as the Milanese Campanile Derby, Spal 1, Genoa 1, Torino 2, Milan 0. Right, let's start off with Atalanta, guys. I mean, they had to wait until the 81st minute to break the deadlock, but they did it. And now they sit in fourth place, having booked their spot into the Coppa Italia final as well just a few days ago. It's been a great period for the Orobici. Vittorio, your thoughts. Can Atalanta do it?
Well, we said it in the last podcast, we don't believe they're going to be able to achieve this this goal, but they're there. They are fourth now. They are still fighting for the Champions League. They beat Udinese without Ilicic, that looked to be the best player they had in the last month or so. He was astonishing. So why not? Now, next weekend, they're going to play against Lazio. That's going to be another vital match for them. If they win there, then why not? I think they can reach the fourth spot, which would be an unbelievable achievement for them, without forgetting that they're still in the final of the Coppa Italia. And, you know, unbelievable season for Atalanta, and incredible performance by Gasperini. Every season they sell the best players, and anyway, he finds a way to build an amazing team with great youngsters who perform really, really well.
Tommy, I don't think anybody, you know, and Vittorio's touched on it, we've spoken about it on previous shows, we didn't think that they would actually go through with it, that it would actually happen, that they'd actually be able to pull it off. And of course, there is still a very long way to go, but are you surprised as well that at this point in the season, Atalanta are where they are? They're in the Coppa Italia final, as Vittorio mentioned. I mean, what a great time to be an Atalanta supporter.
Yeah, I mean, I to be fair, I was one of those that thought that Atalanta was going to do a great league for sure. But when they were in their fourth spot, I didn't think they were going to hold it. I think by the end of the season, they were going to show to be a bit more tired, a bit you know, less in condition compared to other teams. So yeah, I was one of those that was thinking this. But yeah, there they are. And there's only four games to go. And yeah, like Vittorio said, the next game against Lazio is going to be absolute vital for them, because after that, there's only Genoa, Sassuolo, and Juventus that already won. So it's potentially 7 points there. So yeah, against Lazio, if they do win against Lazio, which would be obviously very hard, they're away as well. That would be the turning point in the season. If they had to drop points there, I think it would be tough for them to kind of recover the fourth spot. But either way, again, incredible season, incredible achievements. Even if they have to finish fifth or even sixth and don't win the Coppa Italia, it will still be remembered as an incredible season by the underdogs.
Absolutely. Vittorio, given that they had to play on Monday after everybody else, do you think they were under increased pressure? And do you think that maybe affected their performance? Because they did struggle to break down Udinese, didn't they? It took an 81st minute penalty. Udinese, of course, fighting for their lives. But do you think that playing on the Monday after everybody else just added that little bit more pressure and therefore hindered Atalanta's performance?
Well, we have to remember that they played even the semi-final of Coppa Italia this week. So they were even tired and they weren't used to... This is a team who is not used to play twice a week, you know, because... they're young, they don't have international experience. So it was a great test, because Udinese is still fighting for the relegation. They're fighting, they need points to stay in Serie A. So it was a tough match for Atalanta, who didn't have Ilicic, that is battling an injury. So it was really a complicated test, because they already knew that winning would be in the fourth spot for them. They were tired because they played a very important match on Thursday. So it was a really important test, and they passed it. Yeah, you were saying that they scored lately, but, you know, this was a tricky match for me. I thought Atalanta could lose some points there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's touch on Udinese just quickly. They're down in 17th position, I think it is. Yeah, just above the relegation zone. They're 4 points clear of Empoli. Tommy, do you think Udinese will have enough to stay up? Or are Empoli showing any signs of perhaps closing that gap and leapfrogging them and saving themselves?
Well, you know what? I really feel bad for Empoli, because I feel like they've been the most unlucky team in this season out of all of them. Because we know that Empoli played good football. They had a few different managers, which again is something I didn't really understand when they fired Iacchini. Whatever, but they played good football. At some bits, they hit an incredible amount of posts. They missed something like three penalties, something like that, and they conceded a lot of goals in the last minute. I think they have a great squad. Francesco Caputo up front is incredible. This is the season of his life. He'll never probably do a season like this ever again. And he's scoring a lot, carrying the team. They have a great, great goalkeeper that I wouldn't be surprised next year to see in other teams, which is Dragoski. And overall, I think they have a good squad. They don't deserve to go down. But look at them. They have 4 points now behind Udinese. So I think Udinese is probably safe at the moment, even though, there's still four games. And the next one, they have Inter, which obviously is not... It's not an easy game, but yeah, four. They will have to drop 4 points in the last four games. But we did see in the past few seasons that some miracles happens in the last few days, like happened to Crotone a few years ago. So you never know. But I think they're safe at this point.
Yeah, fair enough. Be interesting to see if Empoli can put a little run together and drag them back into it. Now let's move on to the Derby d'Italia. It ended 1-1. Cristiano Ronaldo's equaliser in the second half denied the Nerazzurri all 3 points after Raja Nainggolan's spectacular opener. Now, Vittorio, we'd been talking earlier on in the season about how the Nainggolan sign didn't really work. It hasn't really come off. Are we starting to see signs now of what this player can do? I mean, it was a sensational goal, wasn't it?
Yes, probably we are starting finally. I think The big difference is Nainggolan has been playing a lot in Rome, and Rome is a completely different city from Milan. It's different the way they think and they live football. He struggled to understand the new way of living in Milan, which cost him some time. Then he's getting older. He got some injury, which he usually didn't have in the past. So he struggled at the beginning to find the right rhythm with the team, with the city, etc. And now finally he's getting used to it and start playing as he normally does. Plus, he hates so much Juventus that every time he plays against them, he usually has an amazing performance. So, and he showed it again this weekend. But you have to be honest and say Juventus is not fighting anymore for nothing. So it's hard for them to compete, play at the same intensity that the other teams does against them. So, but I rate Nainggolan very high. I think he's one of the best midfielder in Italy. So I was sure he would recover eventually. It's just a question of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Tommy, this whole debate, and we've spoken about this before on previous shows, we always talk about how Juventus are desperate to win the Champions League, how, you know, that's the one thing that Inter hold over them, because Inter have done it more recently, and they put a fantastic display, didn't they, in the San Siro, sort of mocking Juventus. That really bothers the Juve faithful, doesn't it? That really, really winds them up.
Yeah, it does. And I thought it was hilarious. And thinking about how much money was behind that, just to take the piss out of Juve fans, that's incredible. Like, honestly, I don't know if I've ever seen such an effort to make fun of someone. But yeah, that you said correctly, for Juve, the biggest thing is to win the Champions League. And the joke comes from the fact that Juve lost an incredible amount of finals. I would say seven, I don't want to be wrong, but I think it's seven Champions League finals in their history. And, you know, they've been saying in the past they want to win it. Buffon, he was saying that he really wanted to win it before he retired. They lost two Champions League finals in the past few years, and they lost the one against Milan over like 15 years ago. So yeah, they historically don't win finals, and that obviously is an easy assist for opponents fans to make fun of them. I wonder how the players felt, really. Like, I was really wondering when that happened, the Inter fans that had all of that, how Ronaldo felt watching. Obviously, he's a professional, so he's used to ignore the fans. But, you know, I think that's the main reason why he moved to Juventus, to win the Champions League with another team and so be remembered as the best and blah, blah, blah. So I wonder how he felt.
Yeah, he must have been pretty pissed off about it. And I think, you know, he certainly shut them up, didn't he, with his equaliser. Vittorio, Icardi's come back into the frame at Inter. There are lots of reports circulating that he could be on his way to Juventus as part of a swap deal with Moise Keane. Could that happen, in your opinion? Because it feels to me like, and I might be completely wrong, you guys would know better than me, but it feels to me like this is, if not the biggest, one of the biggest rivalries in Italy. Can you see them doing much business with each other?
Well, you're right. It's probably the biggest rivalry in Italy. But it's even true that Paratici and Marotta, the sport director of Juventus and Inter, are friends. So this can help. And they have been working together forever, I think. Already in Sampdoria, they have been working together. So there is a relationship there. And we know that Raiola has spoken with Marotta in the past days. And Raiola is the manager of Keane. And at the same time, we know that Raiola is pushing Juventus. They are talking for the renewal of contract of Keane. And we know how good Raiola is. And he wants that his players will play more with Juventus, which at the moment is difficult to believe because they just renewed the contract to Mandzukic. They have Cristiano Ronaldo, they have Dybala. Do you think next year Keane will play more? Yes, probably he will play more than this year, but how much more? We don't know. On the other side, we know that even if Icardi started playing again, well, we are not sure that he's going to stay with the club. We know that the relationship with Spalletti and the club is not great. So
And at the same time, we know that Paratici often have spoken about Icardi, how much he's rated as a striker. So we know that Juventus would love to have Icardi, and this is maybe is the option. You know, Juventus want to get rid of Icardi and get some money out of that, and maybe find a replacement like Keane that is not at the level of Icardi at the moment, but could become even a better player than Icardi. So it would make a lot of sense. It's going to be difficult. We don't know if the fan will love it, etc. But I think it can happen, honestly.
I mean, Tommy, there's other talks going around about Dybala moving to Inter. And I read a report somewhere the other day, just by chance I came across it, that they've already started printing shirts in his name or something silly like that. Is that on the cards?
I think to say where Ricardo's going to go now, it's an easy win for journalists because of the situation, everyone assumes he's going to leave. So everyone is trying to find a possible solution. So Dybala and then Keane, and then I heard it to Real Madrid, to Man United. You hear everything. I think none of this news has a base, in my opinion. There's still no plans. But I do think he's going to leave, though. And you can tell because when this first mess happened, so when he was out of the squad for the first time, there was a bit of talking. He was kind of saying, you know, Wandanara and himself was talking with Love Inter. Now there's been a weird silence, which is I quite enjoy it, to be fair, because, you know, Icardi and his wife, they love to talk on social media and newspaper and stuff. There's been quite a bit of silence in the past weeks. So I feel like Icardi is kind of trying to let the season go. Don't really speak too much, you know, don't really be hated too much or more than he already is. And and yeah, he's definitely going to try to find a good solution this summer. In my opinion, it would be a bad idea for Juventus to leave Keane like this for a player like Icardi, because we know Icardi is amazing, but what happened with Inter, it could potentially happen in Juventus again. And we know that Juventus are very strict with players, that sort of players. So what if Icardi does a similar sort of thing and then he goes out of squad and they left Keane for it? I think it wouldn't make sense, really. Dybala, I think it would make a bit more sense because Dybala is another player that is amazing, like Icardi, but it's not really finding the right fit for Juventus. So swapping the two players might potentially unlock them both, and I will obviously see it happening.
Be interesting to see, won't it, how that situation unfolds. Now, game number three that we're going to discuss this week, and as I called it at the beginning, it's the Milanese Campanile Derby, Sampdoria 1, Lazio 2 in the end. I want to get both your thoughts on this game. I know it's a game you would have both watched very closely, you know, supporting your respective teams, and I'm sure you've got plenty of emotions, plenty of thoughts. Vittorio, starting with yourself, you must be thrilled with the result. What did you make of the performance?
Well, I thought it was a very important test for Lazio, because after the great performance and the great victory in the semi-final of Coppa Italia away against Milan, you know, the team could have lose focus in a very important match. Lazio had to win this match to keep alive the chances of Europe, not only of Champions League, but Europe League. I thought, surprisingly, Lazio played really, really well. The first half went ahead thanks to two goals of Casedo. And in the second half, though, Sampdoria came out, even if they were one man down for... I don't know if it was a good decision from the referee to send off Ramirez. I thought the second yellow card was a little bit weak. But in the second half, Sampdoria played much better. I think Gianpaolo made a couple of changes that really helped Sampdoria step up. Sampdoria nearly drew a match that should have lost. So overall, I think Lazio deserved to win, but... Sampdoria in the second half played really well and had the chance to draw the match. So again, Quagliarella scored, he's unbelievable. But yes, Lazio, if Lazio want to keep up and fight for the Champions League, they have to start to perform 90 minutes at a high level, not only 45.
Tommy, your thoughts, how are you feeling after that one? Feels like with Sampdoria it's one step forward, two steps back.
Yeah, that's bang on. I would agree with the fact that Lazio deserved the game, to win the game. First half, there was absolutely not a chance for us. I was scared it was going to end 3-4-0, especially after the red card. And yeah, I agree with the fact that 1 man down, we actually found a better balance. We actually showed up and started playing decently. Something that I always say, and I remember saying in one of the early episodes of this podcast this year, is that like every year with Gianpaolo, Sampdoria goes on holiday in mid-April. To be fair, this season has been a bit better than the last few seasons, because last few season, like 1st of April, like it's completely like Sampdoria will lose them all. So this year is not really happening that, but again, you can really see the physical preparation of all the players is really going down compared to the past few months. So I think that if this game had been played a few months ago, I probably wouldn't have been that bit different. But with the Sampdoria of now, yeah, Lazio definitely deserve the win. One thing I would like to say, and I mean, I'm really not trying to find excuses. I say again, Lazio was the better side. But it's just a shame how it started, because Colli, our central defender, he had a stomach virus, a stomach problem. So he lost the ball in a very silly way with Caicedo. And you can tell they really couldn't keep up with him. Usually he's a very fast player, very physical player. So I thought he was going to get the ball back or at least push Caicedo to the side. But he literally left in goal. He couldn't keep up with him. And only 5 minutes after the goal, he left the pitch. And there's news today that he still hasn't gone over it. So it wasn't just just this stomach problem. It's a problem in a virus, and he might miss the next match as well. So that's a shame, because starting 1-0 down after, 1-2 minutes, obviously made everything harder for us. So if that hasn't happened, maybe it would have been a different game. But again, Lazio deserved it. And Sampdoria tried. We had an incredible chance with the Frel when the result was 2-1. Very, very good across from Murru, and the Frel was literally in front of the goal, without the keeper, without the defender, nothing. The only thing, the ball was very fast, so it wasn't the easiest. But still, I think most players in Serie A or in professional football would have scored that. So that's a shame. But again, Lazio was the better side and they deserved it. We were already out the Europa, the Europa League battle. Unless for miracles, now we're officially out. So we're just going to, I guess, enjoy the last 4 games. Without too much pressure.
I mean, yeah, when you look at the table, when you look at between 4th and Lazio down in 8th, it's very close, isn't it? 4 points separates those teams. And then, obviously, there is a little bit of a gap between Lazio and Sampdoria that's opened up, obviously, more now. So, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's time for Sampdoria to almost go on holiday. But let's talk a little bit about Roma, because I know I was highly critical of Claudio Ranieri when he took over the job. And we were talking about their chances of getting back in the Champions League race. And we basically, pretty much all of us, I think, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, Vittoria, we pretty much dismissed them, didn't we? But they're only a point now outside of the top 4. They've won 3 of their last 5. And of course, now they're only a point behind Atalanta. Has he done a good job? Are they sort of, in with a real shout now? Well, I mean, the table suggests so, but in terms of the way they've been playing, how are you feeling about it?
They haven't been playing great, to be honest, but they won a lot of matches. And as we said, Ranieri is not a great manager, but did the simple things that works, He put the players in the right position. We said it in this podcast already. Di Francesco was trying strange things, like playing Pastore on the wing and so on, which didn't make sense. Instead, Ranieri is doing the simple things, putting the players in the right position, working on the defense, because Roma was allowing too many easy goals. Now it's much difficult to score. Olsen is on the bench. Mirante is playing. So Roma is not playing amazing football, but now they're playing normal football without trying to invent nothing spectacular. They're not thinking they're the Barcelona. And they're starting winning. And if Atalanta didn't win against Udinese, they were 4th. And the fixture for Roma going on, it's quite easy. They only have Juventus to play against. But as I said before, you don't know which type of Juventus will play against them. Maybe Allegri will play the Primavera or some of the players who hardly played this season. So you don't know if it's going to be a tough match or an easy one. But for me, especially considering that Atalanta has the Coppa Italia final, I think Roma is the favorite for the 4th spot. even though they're not playing great football. But I think the big credit to Ranieri is doing the simple things. Put things, do things normally without trying to invent amazing thing like a Pastore on the winger and things like that.
Yeah, Tommy, what have you made of their progress? There has been some progress, hasn't there?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Winning, they won a couple after the little series of bad results that Ranieri had when he first came. He had a couple of 1-0 win against us at home, which I don't think they deserved, really. And they 1-0 with Udinese at home. And that gave a lot, they gave a lot of momentum for Roma. And what Vittorio said is absolutely spot on. I think it was very weird when he first came, was trying his 4-4-2, which is, you know, his formation. Which obviously is not the way that Roma was built. And Dzeko and Schick up front, I think enough managers now tried to make it work, and we know that it doesn't work. Now he's finally playing again, like Vittorio said, the play is the right position. He's playing with his 4-2-3-1, which I think is a great formation for Roma. The players like El Shaarawy, which has been playing amazingly since Ranieri joined. Pastore is finally CAM, not a winger anymore. He's playing Kluivert as well, which I'm really liking it. So yeah, I think he's finding a balance, and so Roma finally found their identity, which they haven't had in a while. And at this point, I was one of those that didn't believe in Ranieri, but again, when he was trying with 4-4-2, I did say once that if he kept going with the 4-4-2, it would never reach not even the Europa League spot. But now they finally found the balance. Is doing well, and I think it would be interesting to see how he'll do next season if they kept him with the whole summer to prepare. I don't know if they're going to keep him or not, probably not, but I think it would be interesting to see what it would do with the whole summer and maybe sign a few players that he likes.
And Tommy, we have to say something, because Roma is playing a little bit better, but what's changed is that Milan has been playing terrible. After losing Derby, Milan has been performing really, really bad. I think in the last 5 matches, they beat only Lazio. Lazio was 4th after beating Inter away, and they were able to lose against Chievo, Spal, draw against Sassuolo. So it's not Roma that is playing incredibly well. It's the other team that are playing rubbish. And so they help Roma to get back in position. Because if Milan and Lazio kept playing at the good level as they were doing before, then probably Roma didn't have any chances. Instead, now Torino is above Milan and Lazio. So it's completely different from 1 month ago.
Yeah, that's true. And that makes me feel even worse about Sampdoria, because if we played like we used to play until a few months ago, we would probably be there with Torino. But that's another story.
Let's talk about Torino-Milan. It was 2-0 to Mazzarri's side. They finally beat Milan in a Serie A fixture for the first time since 2001. Of course, Milan needed to win this with Torino 3 points behind them. And then, of course, Torino, by winning that, had the superior head-to-head record. Not to mention that Roma, as we've already said, had already won. Starting with Vittorio, what's gone wrong at Milan? Is it time for Gattuso to go? Because there's lots of talk about that. There's lots of talk about Leonardo being under pressure. I've read some stories about Gattuso talking about how he's been abandoned by Leonardo and Maldini, I think he was talking about as well. It just seems like a shit show, if I'm being honest.
I think sack Gattuso now is far too late. It wouldn't change nothing. As we said in the podcast, I don't rate Gattuso a great manager. He failed everywhere he had been. So he's a great sportsman. He's a great guy, but he's not a very good manager. And I still believe Milan has very good players, but still they're playing rubbish football. And now that Piontek is not scoring again, Milan is struggling to score. It's struggling to play football. A midfield with Bakayoko and Kessié, it's very weak. They're very physical, but with the ball on their feet, they don't know what to do. And Milan is struggling. It's not playing great football. While Torino, it's the typical Mazzarri team. Very well organized in defense and very dangerous in counter-attack. And that's what they did against Milan. They deserve to win, to be honest. Torino played much better than Milan. And I think Gattuso is right saying that Leonardo didn't help him. Leonardo is always complaining about referee. He said it when Milan went out in the Europa League, blamed the referee, but not the fact that Milan was in the easiest Europa League group ever and they were able to not pass them. They lost against Juventus, and again, Leonardo blamed the referee. but he's not blaming the fact that he's not helping the manager. Some players are doing what they want, and so on. So, and there are rumors that this summer, even Leonardo could lose his job because he's doing badly why he came to Milan for. So, and there's the biggest problem is Milan needs money because they have big salary. And if they don't reach the Champions League, then I think they will have to sell a lot of very quality player. So we have to see what happened this summer. At the moment, Milan can still reach the fourth spot. But if they keep playing football like that, it's going to be really difficult. Again, the fixture is very positive because they don't have tough matches coming along. But still now they have a gap between them and the fourth spot, and they have to hope that Atalanta start losing points because otherwise it's going to be complicated for them.
Yeah, of course, it'll be quite embarrassing, wouldn't it, given the position that they were in. At one stage, we were even talking about them finishing third, and obviously that's not going to happen now. Tommy, what's your take on the situation on the red side of Milan? Because, you know, it's a big story at the moment.
Yeah, I think the real problem in Milan, like I said in the previous episodes, is that the basic problem is that the squad is not good enough. And I'm going to repeat that. And when Milan was doing very well and it was going for third place, I remember that I was saying that Gattuso was doing, in my opinion, a great job, and it was being very good because it was actually reaching the third place with a squad that really doesn't deserve it. A squad that, in my opinion, is way less good than Lazio, Roma, and other teams, and Inter, and obviously Napoli, Juventus. I think the players they have are quite terrible for the history of Milan. And so I think that it was Gattuso's, it was because of Gattuso they were doing good, because he was doing a great job psychologically. Just like now, it's probably his fault. They're not doing that well. It's probably we know that he's not an experienced manager, so he probably didn't really know how to handle the situation. And having the momentum and keep it, especially after the defeat in the derby, because that's really when things started going down. But again, if you don't have the players, it's very hard to perform. Like Milan is still playing with Çalhanoğlu in the winger, which to me is terrible. I wouldn't want Çalhanoğlu even in my team. Or if you look at the midfield, Cassie, I mean, I don't want to start go here and, you know, talk bad about every single player that Milan has. They have a few good players, of course, like Piontek, Suso, but they need someone to serve him. Suso completely stopped playing after a few months ago. He completely stopped doing assists. His performance dropped drastically. Paqueta as well, which started very well. Now, I mean, he had an injury and I was trying to recover. To have a striker like Piontek up front, you need someone to serve him good balls. Otherwise, he's not going to get the ball back in midfield and, you know, dribbles the more like Messi and score and top it. So if these players, they're not performing, if they're not well in a psychological point of view, then the whole team is not going to perform, and that's what's going on. But again, they have the easiest calendar among all the other teams in the battle. So they have Bologna, Fiorentina, and Spal, which they're not fighting for anything, and Frosinone, which is already down. So, I mean, Bologna is a good form, Fiorentina is a very bad form, Frosinone is already down, Spal is the last game, they're not going to have anything to fight. So, I mean, they have the best calendar, so technically they're still the favourites, but by the way they're playing, they're probably not the favourite.
Yeah, fair point. But, you know, despite all that talk, it is only 3 points, isn't it, between them and fourth. It seems like, they're down in seventh and it seems like it's a million miles away, but it's not. That's how condensed that section of the table is at the moment. Vittorio, Torino have kind of been plugging away at it all season. They've had a very good season. We've spoken on previous episodes about Mazzarri, about what you're going to get from him. You know what to expect. But, you know, I'm surprised that at this stage in the season, Torino are currently in sixth and above Milan, above Lazio, above Sampdoria at the minute. I know there's still a few games to go, but how impressed have you been with them this season?
I think Mazzarri did a great job. I think at the beginning of the season, no one could think that Torino would have ended in that position. But as I was saying for Roma, I think it's similar Torino's playing well, probably more better than expected, but they're even helped by performance of Milan, Lazio, Roma, etc. Because if Milan and Lazio played at their level all the season, well, they're better than Torino. But as I said, Mazzarri is a very, very difficult manager to play against. He's very well organized. He prepares very well the match. And it's very difficult to score against Torino. And they can get very dangerous, especially if Belotti starts playing well like he's doing in the recent matches. They have Sirigo, who is back in top form. They have a good defense. So they have some quality players, Torino. So they can be very dangerous. Again, I didn't expect to see Torino playing there, but Mazzarri is a very experienced manager. The club is solid. Now, we know that there are rumors that Petacchi could finish being the sport director of Roma. And this just proves how the club is doing have been doing very well in the last year. So, and this shows you that sometimes this money is not important. Milan spent far more money than Torino. But if you spend the money wisely, then you build a team that can compete with Milan and all the others.
Absolutely, absolutely. Guys, I mean, that brings us sort of towards the end of the show. The only one more thing I wanted to ask you guys about and get your thoughts on. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of reading these last few days. And as I normally do, I like to scour through the papers from different countries and different leagues and et cetera, et cetera. And this talk of Eusebio Di Francesco returning to management. Tommy, is this link between Di Francesco and Milan a reality in your opinion? Could it happen? Do you think he would be a good fit?
I think, to be fair, I think it could happen because Milan has been doing a lot of bad choices in the past few years. So it wouldn't surprise me if they would make one more bad choice.
I guess that tells us what you think about it then.
Yeah, it's really the opposite of what Milan needs at the moment. I think Di Francesco should probably start again from a mid-table team and just kind of try to shine again like he did with Sassuolo.
He was linked with Fiorentina. There was rumors that they were talking for a deal this summer, but then Pioli resigned and he couldn't take the jobs because the Serie A rules doesn't allow a manager who has been sacked to take a job in the same season. So they had to hire Montella. But otherwise, probably this summer, Di Francesco would have been the manager of Fiorentina.
I didn't know that. I didn't know about that rule, that if you get sacked, it's not like the Premier League then where it's like a merry-go-round of the same managers over and over again going around. Vittorio, whilst we're on Fiorentina, what's happened to them? They've just plummeted, haven't they? What happened with Pioli? I don't think we spoke about this. I think it was during our break when this happened. Why did he resign? What was the issue there?
Well, Fiorentina wasn't winning more than playing badly, wasn't winning a lot of match. They start losing a lot of match, but I don't know if Tommy agree with me. Fiorentina is a very talented team, but very young. And so it's clear that this team will have big ups and terrible downs. And the fact that even the goalkeeper, Lafont, is playing terribly didn't help, because goalkeeper, it's fundamental. Just go and check what Roma did this season with Olsen. But the problem is that they decide to keep Pioli till the end of the season. But Pioli said, if you don't trust me, if you don't respect me, then I won't stay here. And he resigned. And obviously, Fiorentina wasn't prepared because they were talking with Di Francesco, as I said. Probably Pioli knew already this thing and said, well, I'm losing the job anyway, so I'm quitting now. And Fiorentina was struggling to find a manager. And they called Montella, who I don't rate very highly, to be honest with you. I don't think he's a great manager. He's been lucky in the past, but he proved when he was in Milan that he was not a manager for big teams. And he's doing the same now with Fiorentina. He came back and Fiorentina started losing again. And there are rumors that Chiesa would leave, so it looks like he's not very focused. As I said, Lafont is turning out as a terrible signing. There are a lot of interesting youngsters, but you need a manager who's able to make them perform, make them focus on every single match, and not when they're playing only against Juventus. And this is not very easy, and I don't think Montella is good for that.
Absolutely. The only thing good thing I remember about Montella was his aeroplane celebration. I mean, he was a fantastic player, but that is the thing that sticks in my mind. I remember watching it on Channel 4, I think it was, on Sunday mornings. And I used to run around the living room trying to copy this celebration. Tommy, just finally, your thoughts on the whole Pioli-Fiorentina situation.
Well, I'm going to say something that Zidane said when he came back to Real Madrid. He said it's very hard to motivate players that are not playing for anything. So for Fiorentina, for the manager, whoever it is, to come in a team like Fiorentina that's not in the Europa League battle, it's definitely not in a relegation battle. It's in that kind of limbo with the A between the two things that you're not really battling for anything. It's hard. It's tough for any manager, I think. Then again, I don't rate Montella. Montella is like Inzaghi, great striker, very poor manager. Filippo Inzaghi, obviously, not Simone Inzaghi. And so I don't think that's really what Fiorentina needed. I agree that they have a lot of good youngsters. I don't agree that Lafont was a terrible signing. Yeah, he has made some mistakes, but I think he also proved during the season that he's a talented keeper that they can keep for a lot of years. And also a lot of other players, like Milenkovic, Veretout, Dabo, Gerson, Muriel as well. He's not super young, but he's still a young, talented player. So what they do, again, I mean, and they need to start again from the summer. The whole keeper manager, whether it's Montella or Di Francesco, whoever is going to be, keep the same manager that is going to do the preparation in the summer and give them time to prepare. And I think Di Francesco would be good at Fiorentina, to be fair, because it's not like Roma when you have the pressures that you have to finish top four or perform well in the Champions League. In Fiorentina, you don't have that kind of pressures. Yeah, Fiorentina is battling for the Europa League. I think that's that will be the goal for next season. But yeah, so and they definitely have the teams and the players to finish around 7th, 8th next season.
Tommy, but would you play Dragoski or Lafont? Because Dragoski is a...
Dragoski, yeah.
So they sent away Dragoski to Empoli to buy Lafont. You know, they could have kept Dragoski, who's even young. So
Dragoski,
you know,
has been incredible this season. They conceded a lot of goals, obviously, for the poor defence of Empoli, but he's been playing incredibly. That game against Atalanta, oh my God.
Yeah, so you know, that's the type of mistake you don't have to make. You have already a very good goalkeeper and young, and you send it away to get Lafont anyway.
I agree with that.
There you go. You finally agreed on something. Right, guys, that brings us to the end of another episode. Thank you very much for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at Simply Serie A. If you're listening via iTunes, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. You can also find the show, of course, on SoundCloud and, of course, on Spotify. We'll be back next week with another review show. Until then, ciao.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.